Good evening. Thank you for supporting Lakeshore Public Radio at 89.1 FM on the dial and online streaming live in real time at lakeshorepublicradio.org. I'm Tom Lounges, and this is Midwest Beat, a program all about music and the people who make it. My in-studio guest tonight, Nomad Planets. We've got the entire group here. We're going to talk about their latest album, Rise and Shine. We're going to play some music live, find out about their history. They've been around the scene for a long time, playing the Chicagoland and Midwest market. So stick around and join us for Nomad Planets, an hour of great music and conversation coming up after your headlines here. Good evening and welcome back to Lakeshore Public Radio. I'm Tom Lounges. It's time for Midwest Beat, a weekly program here on Tuesday nights that gives you an hour of great music and conversation. My guest tonight in studio, Nomad Planets. They've been around for a long time here in the Midwest, and they've got their recent album is going to be featured tonight, as well as some brand new material, perhaps. Let's start things off with the title track. This one's called Rise and Shine, and we're going to bring it up now. We'll meet the band after this.
Daddy's little secret has been compromised. Space meets time, the numbers climb. Is anybody listening on the production line? I say when, in one more moment, I'll be coming to get you. I won't let them walk away with your cold, dark heart. Calling all cars, we're invisible. In the restaurants and bars, we're thinking our claims we're claims with invisible.
Sunshine. Nomad Planet's title track of their latest album. And that's when it made my top 10 of 2018 this year. These guys, whenever they put an album out, seem to wind up on that top 10 list. Been a fan of the group for a long time. Been a fan of its primary lyricist, Mark Mybeck, going back to the old Whistling Jupiter's days. But I'm showing my age there. But let's talk a little bit about this CD. Let's talk about the music. We'll hear some new stuff. That song had a little bit of a spaghetti western kind of feel. So I want to find out about the making of that tune. With me in studio, Mark Mybeck, who is the vocalist, acoustic, and electric guitarist. Phil Rapchek, bass player, vocalist, keyboardist. John Carpenter, who has been here a few different times with different projects. He is here to do vocals, acoustic, electric guitars, talk about the production. And Terry Boylan is here for to talk about the drums.
And hi, guys. Moral support.
And moral support. Or immoral support. Hard to say. Nomad Planets, how long, basically, have you been around? I mean, I've been in the scene a long time, and it seems like you've been here quite some time.
Yeah, I don't really remember, to be honest with you. Phil and I have been playing together for 30 years. John and Phil and I have been playing together since like 1991. And so when Nomad Planets, I think it was like 2001, maybe?
I think so. Yeah,
something like that.
Around there.
Now, you guys also had your own radio show for a while, too.
We did, yeah. With
Phil and Mark.
Flying Around the
Phil
Sun.
And Mark show.
Yeah. Thank you for plugging that. That was a lot of fun.
Yeah, that was fun. We had good time. What happened to that? Why aren't you doing that anymore? That was on our friendly station down in Hammond, WGOB.
Yeah, you know, when they switched locations, the physical plant of the station, they kind of cut programming a little bit. And then they asked us to come back, but schedules were different for work, and it just was impossible to kind of put the time in to make it as good as we wanted it to do.
Mm-hmm.
So just kind of fell off by the way. So it had a nice run. We did like either 3 years, 4 years. I can't remember.
4 years.
That was a long show too. Was it 2 hours, 3 hours?
No, it was an hour, but sometimes it went into an hour and a half.
I was going to say when Lisa and I guessed it, and when Skatefish guessed it, it seemed like
those were
longer. Really long.
They were
show.
Longer. Yeah. 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 Yeah.
So do you miss it? Do you miss radio?
Yeah. That was a lot of fun. Looking back on it, it was fun. So yeah, we do. It was nice meeting so many musicians and finding out how much great local original music there is around here. So that was very rewarding, and it was a lot of fun.
Yeah.
Did you archive it, podcast it anywhere?
It's all up on archive.com or whatever that is. They're all up.
Flying Around the Sun, you'll find it.
Everything.
Okay. So Nomad Planets, you guys were, well, still are doing primarily original music. You have several albums out under your belt. You do a few covers here and there. I know last time you were here, we talked about that. You added some cover stuff in because you kind of have to play the clubs, right?
Yeah, we do some, but we like playing those songs. And not that we twist them up altogether, but we like to do our versions of them. And some of them are relatively straightforward, but we always kind of like to put our spin on things.
Okay.
But the primary amount of what we do is all original because it's what we love doing. And we've been really, really fortunate while you're talking about playing around here. There have been a lot of places that have been very welcoming and very accepting of us playing original music. So we thank places like Wild Rose and the spots that allow for a three-hour show of original music.
That has been changing in recent years, and maybe you can comment on it. Last time I had Robert Rolf Feddersen here, he said that it's the craft beer places are allowing it because those are the people that have their own minds and want to hear new things and try new things. So they don't want to hear Brown Eyed Girl again.
No.
They want to hear new original stuff. So do you is that where a lot of your gigs are at, or at the brew houses?
Yeah, 18th Street and Burnham's a good one for that in Michigan City, and you know, Off Square out here in Crown Point, and the list goes on. I don't want to forget anybody, but it's like, you know, that is true. It's the place where original bands can at least get a foot in the door, you know, and play some original stuff without feeling like
no one's listening.
Yeah. And it doesn't mean that other places like Finnegan's, we play Finnegan's and they allow, you know, so I don't want to slight anybody. It's just that it's really nice to have a place or a scene to kind of.
Well, Finnegan's has always supported original music.
Yep.
They're almost an anomaly in the club scene.
Yep.
Not being a brew house, but being a nightclub and a local tavern type format. But they have always been very open to original music. And I think that's because of Roger's background in the nightclub business.
True.
So. Chicago, that was a big place for you guys back before all these breweries opened, when they always have been open to original music. Are you still playing outside of the region a lot? I know you play the Acorn here and there.
Right? Yeah, we're doing we played the Acorn last year for the first time in New Buff.
Three Oaks,
thank you. Not so much in Chicago. It's tough to get our we have a very, very loyal core of people who come to see us, but it's hard to get people to go kind of make that trek on a Thursday night, you know?
Right.
Again, knock on wood, we've been very fortunate to have a very accepting group of places in Northwest Indiana and hereabouts to allow us to play.
Rise and Shine has been out about a year now, right? Ballpark?
Was it October?
September
22nd.
September of last year. Yeah.
On my 60th birthday.
That's right.
I should be able to remember that one.
You should, or though maybe you shouldn't.
Yeah.
It was your birthday after all. How is the sales aspect of physical CDs and albums and projects like that going? We talked about how the bars and the brew houses are open to hearing the original music. Are they also buying the original music? Are you seeing a spike in sales? Is it, it's a labor of love. And John, I've talked to you about production before. You put your heart and soul into every project you do. And this is not just a project. This is also your band.
Right. Yeah, I think we've seen, usually when we release a CD, initial sales are real good, but after that it kind of falls off, and I think a lot of that has to do with just technology and the direction it's has been going for a while now. It's, CDs are pretty much on their way out.
Right. Are you going to do vinyl?
No, it's not something that I have been wanting to do. I know a lot of people do it, but... Mm-hmm. I don't know. I grew up with vinyl. I love vinyl, but it's not something that I'm looking towards doing now.
If we had pre-sales and an absolute market for it, then yeah, we would do it. But
yeah.
it's just we don't want like a bunch of records sitting around John's house like the CDs are from past years. I mean, it used to be you had to order to make it worth your while. You had to order 1,000 to make it, or whatever it was, 500 or something,
right?
To make the price point matter, but so, he's got archives of his own over there. We don't.
The Nomad Planet.
We don't
room.
Need more.
Wing.
The wing of the house. Now, you guys had vinyl with the old group Whistling Jupiters, because that's all there was out there. Oh, Andrea.
We had a 45. Yeah.
Which I still have.
I do too. I got more. You want more? Speaking of vinyl sitting on a shelf.
But do you still play that song with?
Yeah,
this group?
We do.
That's a classic, and I hope
you
always will play that.
Yeah, we do. We throw that in there every now and again.
Yeah, we do a couple from the old Jupiter's days.
Yeah.
So,
what's the secret? You talked about 30 years, 20 years, all this time together. You guys are almost like brothers here. Definitely extended family members. What's the secret to keeping it together? We see so many bands that can't last a year, or they put out two or three albums, they break up, the singer wants to go solo, or whatever. What is the magic equivalent to quotient, if you will, to make this work like it does?
Insecurity.
That was at the beginning for sure.
Yeah, it's like, well, this
who
is
else a, would do this with me?
That's what it was. And it was like, well, it sounds okay. How does this sound? Does this sound okay? Because I don't think it sounds okay. So not having any egos in that way.
Yeah, for real.
It is.
Yeah.
And it's like, well, I guess it's okay.
This has been a band that has been very supportive of each other. We like each other. We're friends. And like you said, we're it's kind of become family now. We've been doing this for so long.
Kinda.
And everybody's committed to it. That's the main thing.
Should be committed in general.
Yeah.
And we have a pretty much a like mind as far as when we're playing. I mean, we come at it with different styles, but we know more or less what each other is kind of thinking, and it all seems to work out. And the ones that don't, we just don't play them anymore. But, and I got to say, Terry's back there very silent, but his addition, what has it been, 3 years now? 4 years, something like that? Really solidified, what we're doing. It just added a dimension that, again, I always have to backpedal and say, that doesn't mean anybody else, but our other drummers were awesome. But the addition of Terry really, again, it's just there's a language that the four of us have that is beyond describable. I know that sounds very cliche, but it is. We just we just speak the same language musically.
Yeah, we spark together.
Yeah.
Mm. What was it, Terry, about this Motley Crue here that made you want to join and to be part of this?
John and I knew each other from the Chicago scene. He had played in Urban Twang when I was doing big guitars for Memphis.
Wow, I forgot about both those bands. Those were outstanding groups.
And decades ago. I mean, it seems, in a way, it seems like, oh, yeah, that was the band just before we started this. But it's like, no, that was the 90s.
That was a long time ago.
Does anyone remember the 90s? And Eric Lambert does a lot of his recording at John's studio, Thunderclap. And Eric had hired me to play drums on one of his CDs. So that was the first time I had seen John, you know, since hanging
band.
In Chicago. Mm-hmm. And then that kind of led to John said, you know, hey, I get singer-songwriters all the time. You know, I need drummers, you know, because he already had a bass player.
Mm-hmm.
So I wound up kind of, you know, being the house guy there. Then when their Drew, their drummer before me, you know, had physical ailments, you know, some pretty heavy-duty health problems.
So you kind of were able to slip in because you already worked together.
Yeah, and I was like, wow.
Cool.
You know, talk about falling in your lap. This is fabulous.
We have so much fun, man.
We do.
We really, really do. It's a joy every time we play together. There's no ego, no fighting, no nothing. It's just pure fun.
Speaking of playing and being in laps, you have guitars and basses and accordion, other things in your laps. And let's play something. What do you want to play?
We're going to play, there's an acoustic-based song on Rise and Shine called We're Together Now. We're gonna do that for you as we adjust and maneuver.
This is Nomad Planets. You're listening to Midwest Beat at 89.1 FM Lakeshore Public Radio as they get their instruments all prepared here.
We're good.
All right, take it away.
Of you arriving on the wind, come on in. Those of you trudging across the sand, take hold of my hand. Those of you fighting through the dark, together now. To those of you pushing through the rain, the answer's the same. To those of you floating on the dust, we'll do as we must. Of you riding on a storm, you're not alone anymore. In the long run, it doesn't matter how, we're together now.
together now.
Bravo!
All right. They're together now, and they're together here at Midwest Beats, Lakeshore Public Radio. That is Nomad Planets, and a great song off Rise and Shine, their latest album. How many albums out there, guys? Do you know? Have you
Five.
Lost count? Five? Okay. Now, you mentioned also that you guys are kind of session players for John's projects. John, you had them on Jeff Sarver's project while back, right?
No, actually, Jeff came in when you had us play together last year at, mm-hmm. At the Highland Festival. He came in for rehearsal before that.
Okay.
And so we were able to run through some things that
with him,
and we recorded the rehearsal. And I still have that. And I've been meaning to go through. And there's one song that kind of came up kind of nicely just for, you know, the first time we played it together, and it kind of clicked. So I've been meaning to get around to mixing that. Jeff was really excited about it. He really liked me to mix that. And one of these days I get around to it. But that might be what you're thinking of.
That's yeah.
Yeah.
Now we should mention that you are the owner and producer and engineer at Thunderclap Studio. Thunderclaprecording.com is where you can find more information about John's projects, and that's in Hammond. Which brings me to wonder, as a member of the group, as the producer slash engineer of the group, how hard is it to separate yourself from a member of the band and the production guy? And are you ever too close to the material being on both ends?
Right.
How do you balance that?
It sometimes can be difficult. You know, it's more difficult at times than others. But, I mean, we have such a camaraderie, and everybody in this band is so talented with their musical ideas that, if I'm having, you know, like I am now, if I'm having a moment, these guys will pull me right out of it, you know, mm-hmm. and vice versa. I mean, it's a collaboration. I mean, we work as collaborators, you know, I get my name on as producer, and I do the mixing but everybody puts in their touches to this stuff. And,
mm-hmm. and but has John has great ears, and it's evident in all the people that come through when he does all kinds of styles of music, and that special, and you got a special touch, my friend.
That's true.
Well,
you know, and it just and it really reverberates through all of those things. So he's the man.
What's interesting about this album and past albums from you guys is the rhythms of the songs. Every song has its own feel, its own groove. You don't sound the same in the rhythm section. How do you guys decide? There's a little bit of an almost reggae feel in track two, Showdown. Rise and Shine, as I said, has that spaghetti western kind of feel without being redundant or borrowing too heavy from those formats. You kind of bring a little taste of it, a little seasoning, and then you're doing your own thing again. How do you determine how those grooves go? I mean, together, let's address that as the rhythm section.
That's a good question. It's just what sounds good. We play when we rehearse, and we just, sometimes we'll just jam something out and just fall into it. You know, yeah. A different style. We'll just start playing on something, and it's like, well, yeah, well, okay, I'm playing something, and it's, Terry's playing something on the drums, and I say, oh, that sounds like it's got a good disco beat. That's all. Mm-hmm. Put in it, and it's like, you know, we're not going to do a disco song, but
the beat's good.
The beat is good, and then the other guys will come in with something and say, well, it's not exactly a disco, but this style can kind of fit into what he's doing. And so it all kind of morphs slightly this left and right, and it organically just comes together into this type of song. We never have a
blueprint or template or anything.
Yeah, whenever we're going to do a reggae song, or we're going to do a heavy song. Yeah. It's just what comes out. And that album and a lot of our stuff is just really different song to song. And it's I don't know, it's just very, you know, it's just for this song. This song sounds good sounding like this, and that's just the way they go. It's kind of.
When I first reviewed this album, first heard this album, as I was saying earlier before the show, there were certain songs that instantly stuck out and I liked right away. And as I've let the album breathe and grow on me a little bit more, I still like those songs, but they're not my favorites now. Now something new has caught my ear, like Rise and Shine. When I first heard it, it's like, okay, that's a nice song, but I really like this, you know. Now that has become my favorite song. And that's what makes your albums unique, is that you can play them multiple times, and it's like going to a buffet, because you can always try the different foods, the different sounds, depending on your mood. Your album fits multi-moods, as opposed to maybe a headbanger album or a blues album or a country album. You have to be in that kind of certain melancholy or energetic and rowdy mood. Yours can fit all those. It's like a one-size-fits-all album. And I mean that as a big compliment. I hope you take it that way.
Oh, yeah. Thank you. That's what makes a lot of this so fun, is that it's not, and again, never taken away from anybody who does anything, but what we do is just, we just go from thing to thing, and it's not conscious, and it's certainly not meant to be like, look at what we can do. It's just, this is, like Phil said, it's very organic, and there's no thought process involved other than, oh, that sounds cool, and this serves a song, and it's all about that. Nothing else.
All of us, like, we like such a wide variety of music that we and we want to reflect that. We want to play it, you know. And sometimes after it's done, we go, you know, because a record company will go, well, you can't do that.
Right.
It has to be in a vein, you know. How do we market it? But we go, well, that's how we see it. That's how we feel. It's funny that you did the chef analogy, because it's like we're like four maniac cooks over the big boiling pot and going, oh, let's give it a little more pepper, and it just comes out, you know.
Mark, you do most of the lyrics.
Yeah.
Do you write first and then try to bring the music to, or do they come with you and say, here's music?
I gave that up a long time ago. I used to try to do that, and it just always sucked. I just was never good at writing lyrics and then putting music around it. And anymore, and we may have talked about this before, I like to... A lot of times the lyrics that happen when we're first starting things will be the ones that end up, there are a couple like that, where they ended up almost complete. And certainly not all the time, but I like to form words around what the ideas sound like from those first takes, even if it's just, mumble. There's a word in there trying to get out, and so I try to figure out what that might be. Without concentrating too much, you know, it's not like I'm going to the rhyming dictionary and figuring out what rhymes with whoa, whoa, you know. But we try to keep this as loose as possible, and I really like doing that lyrically now too.
Do the songs come together quickly because of that style of working?
Some of them
and the longevity you've known each other.
Actually,
recently,
after we released this new record back in September, after the bloom of that was over, we started working on new stuff, and things have just been
falling
together like really fast, and just coming out of nowhere and clicking. Just everything's been clicking lately.
And like
you say, it's probably has a lot to do with the commitment and the time that we put into this.
And that we're relaxed with each other when it comes to this. There's nobody pointing fingers or saying that sucks or that doesn't work here.
Right.
It may not work there, but we'll figure that out together, and it'll be evident if it doesn't work, and we'll switch it to something else.
Do you usually write as a core unit? I mean, when you're rehearsing, say, okay, let's sit down and write a few things, or here's an idea I had, or do you bring things to the party independently and then try to flesh it out?
Or is it a matter of both? The great thing about being able to rehearse each week, we're very committed to coming. Everybody comes every week, and every once in a while we have to miss, but every Tuesday night is our night, and
except for tonight.
Yeah, except for tonight.
And here we are rehearsing now.
Yes. So we're committed to that, and I lost my train of thought.
Pick it up there, sir.
Well, I was thinking, what I was going to say is we record everything. John lets it roll, and we just we'll play for an hour, 2 hours. There was a, maybe it was 4 months ago we came up with all those songs.
Yeah, there was a night where we had like four things, five things, six things that we're working on from one night.
The and muse it, is with
yeah,
us.
Yeah, yeah, and it was like, and we're saying, we would email each other the next day. I know this. We did a couple things that sounded really neat, and it's like, well, we did this one too, and we did. And before I know, there were like four or five songs that came out of one night. And we pretty much fleshed them out, and they were kind of almost done, complete.
Yeah,
and
crazy.
Now, and we just did a few more things to flesh them out, and have been playing them live in our live shows, and it's like, wow, that was easy.
So this is post Rise and Shine.
Yes. Okay. This year, actually.
You guys mentioned that you might want to debut a new song. You want to do that?
And this is one of those. There was a germ of an idea that the next week just became like poof, you know, and then we threw an A minor in there at a certain time where we'll have to look at each other and go, is it go here? But this is a very, very electric song that we've never really played acoustically before, and normally Terry would be back there bashing things, but we're gonna see how this goes. But
I don't want to wreck anything,
and it's so new that you don't even have a name for this.
We don't have a name. It's Fugue in D minor, not D minor. It's in drop D. Whatever it's called. I'm being facetious now.
All right. This is
what's her name?
Nomad Planets. Again, you're hearing something brand new, never before heard anywhere. Acoustic version of an electric song that's so new it has no name. And this is Midwest Beats, Nomad Planets. Take it away. Left behind. right. Nomad Planet's live on Midwest Beat here at Lakeshore Public Radio. And we're having a great time there. That is brand new music. And you're hearing it here first anywhere. Now, that song is new, but how new is it? You were talking about that it all came together after September's release here.
Like 3 weeks.
Three weeks.
Yeah.
Are you doing the electric version in the live shows?
For the first time last week.
Okay. Yeah. Excellent.
And that's what we've been doing, is taking these songs and playing them live, even if we don't know them, because they take on a little bit of a life of their own when you're playing them live, and it's kind of like, what are we doing? And we're looking at each other and figuring it out as we go, and it's been a lot of fun to do that.
Yeah, it seems like we could get it out there quicker than we used
to. Yeah, we've become more fearless when it comes to that kind of stuff. We used to worry about how things sounded a little more, but again, we're so comfortable with each other, and we got each other's backs, and yeah, if we screw up, we just laugh about it and move on. It doesn't really affect the world in any drastic way.
That's true.
The Bob Dylan thought process of songs is that they are never done. As you know, when you see Bob perform, he'll do a dirge on one version. He'll do a speed metal version of another thing. I mean, he's constantly changing his own music to the point where sometimes they're unrecognizable. Yeah. As the songwriters, to keep things fresh, and because of the fact that songs in many perceptions are living things, do you improvise and punt a little bit when you're performing?
Sometimes, more than we used to, I think.
Yeah. Especially when we can't remember things as much as we used to.
But no, some of the stuff does, we'll play. What's neat about it is when we do play together is we'll, if we're doing a song and we started out maybe a little too quick, or something that's not like the norm, we'll just kind of go with that, and maybe we'll play, or it's too slow, maybe we'll play it more reggae-ish, or just for an example, or just switch it up a bit, and everybody can pick up on that real quick, and then they alter what they're doing to fit the new whatever it is. You know,
just make it groove.
Yeah, that's it. Yes.
Now, you did a live album from Pierogi Fest.
We did a live album from Eat. Ray Garcia from Taco Rails, event space in downtown Hammond.
Okay.
In preparation for Pierogi Fest a couple of years ago, because people were asking us for one.
Okay.
And so we did that there.
Have you any plans to do like a formal live album, because of the fact that you guys are one of the bands that could probably really pull it off and make the song stand out from the studio versions, a la The Dead or Fish or some of the other bands? Not saying you're a jam band per se, but you've got the ability to kind of reinvent on the moment, or at the moment. So have you thought of doing any kind of live project, be it album or DVD or something?
Well, up to this point, we haven't, but...
But now that you mention it, Mr. Thomas, that's a damn great idea. Can I say that?
Yeah, you can say
that. He who mentions it, I think, does the financial backing. Too. That's how it usually works in this world of ours now.
But... Dave Peterson, who's been doing some of our live sound for us, he's been bringing out gear, and he's been recording all our shows.
Mm-hmm.
And he mentioned to us, I think a couple times ago, that he did sound for us. He says, you know, he's been archiving this stuff, and he said, you know, you guys should do a live album because this stuff sounds really good. And so, you know, since he said that, in the back of my mind, I was thinking, well, you know, maybe we should down the line. If he continues to record the stuff and archive it, then maybe we'll find the best stuff. And who knows, maybe.
You know, when we did that show at the Acorn with the Newports last year, it's cool there because they have a thing where they film and record, you know, and you can purchase, like, the raw footage. And we did that, and we're very lucky to have John to be able to, you know, kind of tweak those things from a sound standpoint, to make it more live. But there's a YouTube video of that performance from the Acorn that's just a straight 40 minutes. And it was very encouraging, you know. I mean, again, we just have fun, but it was really nice to see ourselves from that perspective because we never really do. And the sound was really good and the performance was good, and that's not patting ourselves on the back. It was just a good performance. And
it's a great room, too.
Yeah, it's a great room, and so it lends itself to that, you know? And so that's as close as we have right now to a live thing.
And we can see some of that on YouTube?
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And what was cool about playing the Acorn Theater, you know, that was a really nice step for us to be able to go there and thank you to Mark Rogers and the Newports, Bill for having us open the show. But then it opened the door at the Acorn, so we're going back August 24th. We're doing a show with Steepwater Band, and we are going to rock Three Oaks, man.
That's
just going to be so cool.
Very cool. Yeah, I got a couple of shows coming up there myself. I got four, I think, this year. But what's next on the live agenda? Where are you guys playing? Let's give some plugs to shows.
May 11th at Wild Rose Brewing, 7:30 to 10:30 is what we usually do there. And then June, we're kind of taking off. And then July 6th at Leroy's, July 13th at... Grape and Grain
in Homewood. Have you been out there, Tom?
I have not. Been hearing good things from Dan Lemon and the Lemon Brothers about that.
Great place.
Yeah, they play there all the time.
We just played there a couple weeks ago, last week, whenever it was.
Is that a new joint?
It's an older, not old, but it's been around for a little while, but new owners bought it and turned it into more of a music room, and it's got a great vibe in there, too.
You got to get out there.
And you mentioned Leroy's, and I know Leroy Flores has been... putting his toe in the water on these music songwriter showcases too.
Have
you taken part in any of that yet?
No,
but I know, I think once a month he's doing like original Sunday music
nights, Sunday
night.
So then that at the end of July is Pierogi Fest for the 20th straight
I was gonna
year.
Say you guys are like years, the man. Cornerstone of that musically.
And then Beatles Fest in downtown Hammond, and then we're doing Region Stock on the 16th of August, and then Sunset something, which will be fun, and then the gig at Acorn, you know. So
it's pretty good lineup of shows.
But Wild Rose May 11th.
Okay. Let's play another song off the album. This is one that struck me right away. Another one of those that first play became an instant favorite, still a favorite. Come on, Carolina. This is kind of the poppy one. Before we play it, is there a story behind this particular song? Again, this one has a different sound than the stuff we've heard so far.
No. This is actually an older song that John and me and Drew, our old drummer, and a couple friends, we were at the studio one day and we just started playing the song and I started yammering about something. And a lot of it stayed, but then it became a story about a Canadian couple in love and moving on from their little town of Kenora.
Why Canada?
Because it felt like it fit.
All right. Canadian feel to it.
I like the sound of Kenora. And Saskatoon was already there, and it was a relatively small distance, and it fit the song.
Okay, without opening the rhyme dictionary there.
No, I didn't have to do that.
Come on, Carolina. This is Nomad Planets off the latest album, Rise and Shine. We'll be back with the guys right after this.
Let me play.
Come on, Carolina. Very poppy, very, I guess you'd say 90s Bodines-ish, something like that.
Sure.
Mark, you mentioned that's kind of like your bid for a TV theme show, and or a theme song.
It was tongue-in-cheek, but it could certainly work in the right circumstance if anybody's listening that has a TV show that they need a theme song for.
That's a very catchy, and like I said, the guitars were very surfy sounding, very pop upbeat. Certainly a rom-com kind of song there. Let's talk a little bit about independent musical commences, if you will. Let's start with Phil. What is it that brought you to music? I mean,
I grew up in a musical family. My dad was a big band DJ at CFL and places like that back in the day. So there's always music around the house. My brother is a musical conductor in the Northbrook Symphony. So there's always music around. And I listened to a lot of music and said one day, after listening to Uriah Heep live for 80 billion times, it's like, wow, what is that crazy sound? It was Gary Thayne on this jazz bass playing those insane things that he did. And it's like, what is that? Oh, that's the bass. So that became
your instrument.
Yeah, it was like, it was just very... And then on and on from there, you know, you start when you find out what one thing is, and it's like, oh, okay, well, there's another thing like that. So that was it, basically.
I was never a big bass fan until I heard Jaco play.
Yeah.
And he played it like a lead, and he played it like 10 other instruments. And that made me realize that the bass is more than just the rhythm. I mean, you can really make that instrument stand out.
Yeah, there's just so much to it, and there's so many different types of bass players who filled so many different roles, and it's like, wow, that's a neat bass. This guy's playing very simple, but he plays it so well. But you know, so it's a fascinating instrument.
So a lot of people tend to dismiss the bass player, and I have nothing but respect for bass players because of that.
Right. Yeah, a lot of people don't know what bass is, but if a bass stopped playing, I'd be going, hey, where's the song? You know, so, what happened to my song?
Terry, what brought you to music?
My dad was a big band drummer back in the day, so there was always a set of drums around the house. Mm-hmm. And growing up in New York, he was buddies with Gene Krupa, so as a little kid.
Really?
And I had three older brothers. My dad wanted somebody to follow in his footsteps, so one by one, he'd always take them to Gene's house. Gene had his beautiful drum set with the GK on the bass drum, and, you know, to try to spur them on, and one by one they went, nah, 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 nah. And he goes, son, you're it. You're the last Boylan. You've got to do it. So he took me there, and I was pretty blown away by
Gene.
So
you met Gene?
Yeah. Went to his house.
Wow.
He played on that beautiful white Marine Pearl drum set, sat me on it, you know, kind of came from behind, took my arms and said, you know, do this, do that. But that... what really swayed me is soon after that, the Beatles came out, and I went, oh, boy, I think I like this. So I think it was seventh grade. We were having an assembly, and me and three other guys got mop head wigs, and we lip-synced along with a Beatles record. Mm-hmm. And looking at all those Catholic school girls and their... I know this sounds a little weird, but they were so beautiful,
more, please,
so
more.
Pretty, and they were just screaming for us, and I went, I think I found my purpose in life, and boom, I've been in ever since.
Wow. Just a personal, obviously, if I say Buddy Rich or Gene Krupa, I know who you're probably going to pick is Gene, which I'm on the fence post on that, depends on the day. But if you had, for some of the drummers that don't get their props or sometimes get dismissed as being non-flashy, I mean, you get your Neil Peart and all those people out there, Ringo, Charlie Watts, both of them not so flashy, but boy, they're solid. Take them away and you lose a lot.
They're my heroes. I mean, as much as, I mean, I can see Buddy Rich and Gene Krupa and just go, oh, man. You know, and I idolize them, but I'm not that style. I'll never be that. But Charlie and Ringo are the guys I grew up with. You know, all that 60s music, you know, the Kinks drummer, the Animals, you know, that was the deal. And it's funny because I just saw a couple of interviews with Charlie Watts today, and he's such a soft-spoken, humble guy. He doesn't want to take any kind of credit, you know, and I mean,
to watch him play, it looks effortless.
He's the man. Yeah, he's just...
Yeah. You know? Those are two guys that, you know, they're famous, but you don't hear the props, musically speaking, like you do for some of the other members. So, yeah. John, what about you? What got you into music?
Well, just like Terry, I grew up with Gene Krupa.
No, I'm just kidding.
Anyway, I thought you looked familiar.
Only one Krupa story per customer, sir.
No, it was the Beatles. Just like, you know, many people of our generation, it was the Beatles. Seeing them on Ed Sullivan, and you know, that just made me seeing all those girls scream.
Mm-hmm. And, yeah, it does something to a young boy, doesn't it?
Oh yeah, it does. That's
not anymore, honey.
So right. Yeah, that was pretty much it. You know, seeing the Beatles and
did you start right after that then in the '60s picking up a guitar?
I picked up a guitar, but you know, I had a bad experience with a guitar. My parents, who were not musical. Mm-hmm. Well, my mom was kind of musical, but my dad was not musical. My sister bought me like 6 weeks of lessons at the local music store, and this was like when I was, I don't know, 8 or 10 or something like that, and. My parents bought me a cheapo guitar from Comey's jewelry store.
I love that.
And it was such a bad guitar that the strings were half inch off the neck, and you know, and it just killed my fingers. But I, you know, I didn't know any better because it's the only guitar that I had ever played. So
it almost stopped you there.
It did. It stopped me for a while. It wasn't until many years later that a friend of mine loaned me a guitar that was just like, you know, it was like cutting through butter. It was just so nice to play. It was like, oh, this is what it's like. And then, once I discovered that, then I just was way into it.
Mark, what about you?
My grandmother taught music in as a piano teacher and piano player. My dad played organ. And then I heard Jimi Hendrix, and so I kept playing keyboards. and so I played keyboards in high school in any bands I was in then. And then after high school, I bought an acoustic and went to college and acted like I knew what I was doing. And like this many years ago, I kind of am getting there. That was it, pretty much.
All right. We got about 4 minutes left, right?
Yeah.
Looks good. All right. Sharon Jackson's been sitting in here for Jose and doing a wonderful job.
Nice
thank
job,
you, Sharon. Thank you,
Sharon.
Helping engineer tonight. Let's take it out with music. We got about 4 minutes. Let's play a song.
Okay. You want to do So Good? Or no. What, you want to do So Good So Far?
Yeah, let's do that.
Okay.
All right.
You don't care for
I don't, but that's all right.
This is the final song. Right. This has been Nomad Planets on Midwest Beat. I'm Tom Lounges. We're going to go out with some music the way we came in. Until Friday when I have... Who's coming? Oh, we're going to have a Jim Peterick interview talking about some stuff there. We've got some other guests joining us Friday at noon. Noon to 2 will be the next show, and we'll be back next Tuesday as well. Take it out, guys.
Thanks,
Nomad
Tom.
Planets.
We appreciate being here. Thanks, man.
Thank you, Tom.
Oh, Terry's supposed to start this one. 1, 2, 3, 4.
Meet the great communicator. He's on martini number 5. He bites his lip and swears that later somehow he'll make it home alive. So good so far. Meet the object of his attention. She's smiling hard, she's dressed to kill. She doesn't know the word rejection. She only knows that time ain't standing still. So good so far.